Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
This is Boston's Blue Heron Renaissance Choir, performing a piece of music from an 11th century manuscript. It raises a question. How do we know that this is the way it might have sounded almost a millennium ago? We know because starting in the 9th century, people had begun to figure out how to notate music. We take it for granted now, but in fact, musical notation developed slowly, over about 500 years, from the year 900 to about 1400, by which time pretty much everything that we have today was more or less in place. Harvard professor of music Thomas Forrest Kelly has written about the fascinating history of musical notation in his new book called Capturing Music. And Professor Kelly is with us. Welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Thanks very much, Anthony. Glad to be here.
So I'd love to start with this beautiful chant from the 11th century that we're listening to. And early in your book, you have a picture of the manuscript for this chant. It looks like words written down, but there aren't notes, right, like we'd recognize today. So what are we seeing in this manuscript?
Well, what you're seeing is the first page of the big book of chants for church. This is the first song in any Gregorian chant book, and it says, "Unto you do I lift up my soul." What we have here is the words, "Ad te levavi anima meam," and then above the words are little signs. They call them neumes, which might mean breath or it might mean gesture.
Yeah, and they're little sort of check marks, kind of, right?
Well, some are curvy, some are points, some are sticks. And what they are, in a way, is not actually a picture of the song. They remind you of how the song goes. So you can't, I can't sing that song from this book only. Mm. The people who used this book already knew the songs and used the book to remind them of how a song that they already know goes.
So if they didn't know it, they wouldn't be able to look at this and sing it the way we had just heard it.
That's absolutely right, which seems crazy to us. But we used to sit after dinner with our children, and we had a tiny little book called something like America's Favorite Songs. And it didn't have any notes in it. It just had the words. It had the words to Turkey in the Straw and On Top of Old Smoky and stuff like that. That was all we needed to sing the songs. But we called it a music book. This is a music book, and those gestures are to help you maybe not to remember what the song is, but how to sing it. Maybe it's more a description of performance than the notes.
But I want to play another recording, because I should mention that your book is accompanied by this wonderful CD from the Blue Heron Ensemble that demonstrates a lot of what you're talking about. So this is the hymn Ut Queant Laxis from the 12th century. Let's listen.
Ut Queant Laxis Resonare Filis Miratis Corum Fabulitorum
This is a really, really famous song in later years. It's a hymn to John the Baptist that you sing on the feast of St. John the Baptist in the summertime. But this guy, a monk, a very smart monk, Guido, we call him Guido of Arezzo, figured out a way to write down music in such a way that people who had never seen the music before could sing it.
Right.
What he did was say, listen to this hymn, Ut Queant Laxis, and note, if you will, that each line of the poem starts on a different note, one note higher. So it's, Ut Queant Laxis, Resonare Fibris, Mira Gestorum, Famulitorum, so it's ut, re, mi, fa, sol, la. He said, let's just call the notes by those first syllables of each line, ut, re, mi, fa, sol, la. And we still do that, except I think it's Italian singing teachers changed ut to do.
Is this the beginning of melodic notation? Does this give us melody?
What I think is that it gives you specific notes, specific pitches, which is one of the things our modern notation does. If you think about it, our modern notation tells you two and only two things. What note is it? And how long does it last?
Right.
Guido has figured out how to tell you what note it is. The previous notations don't do that. They give you gestures for things you already know. But I don't want anybody to think that those earlier notations are primitive or unimaginative. I think they're absolutely beautiful and perfectly serve the purpose to which they're suited.
So when did people start paying attention to the length of the notes being sung?
That's the other thing, isn't it? Yeah. The first notations we can find that really make clear what's happening are done by some very smart people in the Cathedral of Notre Dame in Paris. There's an earlier kind of music from Notre Dame that does the amazing thing of combining more than one voice at the same time.
Mm. So let's listen to this, because here's another example. This is Pascha Nostrum by Leonidas, and he's an official at Notre Dame in Paris who had a lot to do with notating rhythm. Let's listen just for a minute. Again, you mentioned multiple voices in there.
Yeah, you can hear that one person is singing slowly, and that's the original Gregorian chant, and the more elaborate other voice is a kind of simultaneous decoration. It can be beautiful and rhapsodic sounding like that for two guys, probably because the one who's singing the rhapsodic stuff just points to the other one to change notes. But a successor of Leonidas, a guy named Perotinus, decided we would write music in three voices and four voices. And for that, you really need to be able to coordinate. And it's in that music that we really have very clear rhythms. And it mostly is based on longs and shorts. Ya, da, 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 da. This is tiny little rhythmic elements that make a titanic piece.
You know, it brings to mind this question that's fascinating. I mean, if notation begins in the year about 900 and is developed over the next half a millennium, you must think about all the music before then that we've lost possession of.
I do. Think if people hadn't decided to do that. We have architecture, we have texts from the Middle Ages, we have sculpture, we have beautiful buildings, we have all sorts of things of the arts of the Middle Ages. And if somebody hadn't decided one day to make some marks on a piece of parchment to save in his pocket and carry across the street for use tomorrow to help him remember this song, all of that amazing sound that must have been part of the world that produced all that beautiful art and architecture would be lost to us.
Do you think that we take musical notation for granted, this idea that we can just sit down at the piano and play a piece of music Mozart wrote several centuries ago?
We've closed the book on musical notation. I mean, my young students, they say, I wrote a song, and I say, well, let me see the sheet music. They say, well, I mean, I wrote it on GarageBand, and it's in my computer. Or people say, I wrote a song this way or that way. So we might be coming out of the age of musical notation, and it went from, say, the 10th century to the 20th century. It had a good run, but maybe it's over.
And why might it be over? Because we can record music, essentially, and so we don't need musical notation?
We have recording devices. Yeah. We have composition programs in our computers. I mean, it's really only in sort of classical music and certain kinds of pop music and film music that you actually need notation. You don't see many music stands at rock concerts, do you?
Sure. But what would you make the case that we lose something if we let this sort of art of musical notation wither?
Well, you know, every change that's happened in the history of musical notation has been somebody deciding that something is important enough to change the system. But every time you change the system, every time a Guido comes along and says, let's write down specific notes, you have to throw out some of those elegant signs that used to give something about wiggly notes or sliding between notes and things that you really can't put on the staff. Every time you write down a specific rhythm, it means that you can't have a flexible rhythm, and so on. Every decision you make privileges something, but it also unprivileges something else. So I don't know, maybe what we're doing now, that is a lot of people operating without musical notation, gives them a kind of freedom. Musical notation, which what we use now is the same stuff that Guido used, so it's really constraining if you want to write South Indian vocal music, or it's really constraining if you want to write African rhythms. It's really designed for a particular kind of music for which it works perfectly, but for a whole lot of music, it's not really much help.
Mm. Thomas Forrest Kelly, I'd love to ask you for whom you wrote this book. I'm not someone who reads music. I'm not a musician. I found it fascinating, this whole idea, but who did you want to write it for?
Let me say I wanted to write it for you, Anthony.
That is, well, thank
you. I wanted to write it for people. I actually meant this to be in the tradition of books about the acquisition of technology in the past.
Hmm.
There was a book about longitude, how people figured out how far around the world they were. There was a book called Brunelleschi's Dome about how
Wonderful
they
book.
Got the dome on the Florence Cathedral. Yeah. What I want people to think about is how clever people have been in the past and still are when they try to figure out how to do something. You won't end up being able to read musical notation. You will end up in your lap a book that sings to you.
Well, tell us what we should go out on.
Let's listen to a wonderful piece, one of the earliest pieces in English. It's very amusing. It's kind of a round, and it says, summer is coming in. It's a perfect thing to do just as it's about to turn cold in Boston. Summer is coming, and it's all about the signs of summer, and it has bovine flatulence and all kinds of things.
All right, and who can resist a piece of old music that includes something about bovine flatulence? Thomas Forrest Kelly, thank you so much. What a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you,
this.
Anthony.
That's Thomas Forrest Kelly. He's a professor of music at Harvard University. His new book is called Capturing Music, The Story of Notation, and he'll be appearing at the First Church in Cambridge this Saturday, where you can hear this performance live by the Blue Heron Ensemble. A lot more information at radioboston.org. And Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Summer's not coming, but join us again tomorrow just the same for more Radio Boston.